lawyer and you have three to 12 little kids. You know what I'm saying? Are you going to, it depends how many kids you're going to have. Rappaport may have a very big family. You know what I'm saying? You never know. Bring, you know, how many ball boys do you need to be able to, teach them all. You know, you got to teach them all. You know? So the answer is to be fully honest, on one level it's not real life, and on another level it is real life. Well, it's not real life. It's true. You're not gonna sit every single Monday night, get together with friends that you're gonna be both learning with and sharing very unique, intense experiences, both within just the rigorous learning of Torah Shabbat Peh, Torah Shabbat Chtav, the different classes, the different shiurim, the different ideas, the different tiulim. That's true. That's something that's very unique to the years or year that you're here. But the one point that it's not true, and it's a mistake, that if you look at this just as, okay, it's a nice chavaya, it's a nice experience, but it's not real life, is you'll miss a lot of the important lessons that you're supposed to take. And one of them is that it's not only Shabbos that you need to be able to sing, and I use that as a metaphor, but it's every single day. It's every single day on a certain level to be able to stop in our crazy busy world, and it's very much connected to the article we're going to talk about, to be able to think and do a proper cheshbon nefesh, to say where you're at. And even with connected to Mr. Book talking, and being able to create an environment of support, of being able to feel confident that you can say, share over ideas that people want to hear. It's very, very important. Many people have walked into my shir not as confident to speak publicly. And as the year progresses, because of the chevra that is created, then all of a sudden they feel confident in what they have to say. Even if it's a little controversial at times, or a little touchy-feely at times, you're able to say, look, I'm an environment that's supporting me, being able to really be myself. And that's true both within the VOD, it's also true, again, within your experience, hopefully, that you'll be learning from here. And that's where I return just to one more time. I've already mentioned it probably around 4 to 6 times about the phones, where, again, if a person, while the singing is being on the phone, so then you're not really here. You're here, but you're not here. Okay? And you could say, look, I was doing the right thing, and I'm not pointing out, I don't care who was on the phone, I'm talking about just in general. The idea is, are you here, or are you really with somebody else? And its concept is a sports metaphor, it's called being in the zone. It's a zone. Which means, can I really be here? Or do I have to answer every single text? I get a WhatsApp. Or are you able to turn off your phone and not be here? Not be there. And really be here. And that's something, you're going to have that where you're going to have that with your wife, you're going to have that with a chavrusa, you're going to have that with your kids. The worst thing that a father can hear nowadays is, but you're never with me, you're always on your phone. Okay, physically I'm there, but you're not there, you're always answering emails, you're always seeing WhatsApps, and you're not there. And part of what the article that we're about to discuss, or at least for me to, for the people that did read some of it, is, can you really be there? Can you really find yourself to just be here and expose yourself to new ideas, to new people from around the globe, and not just constantly just getting a WhatsApp or getting a text from this guy or from this girl somewhere else where you're not going to be able to actually just be in the Beis Medrash? When I say be in the Beis Medrash, I mean the whole experience of Talmud Torah, the whole experience of saying, Chas v'shalom, you come back 3-4 months from now, and I'm not really feeling, I don't feel I'm growing in Torah, I don't feel I'm as connected to Torah. Why the heck would I ever sacrifice for Torah? I don't think I'm that good, I don't think I'm that. And the question, the one answer that you might have to ask yourself, or a question you have to ask yourself is, did you give yourself the opportunity? Did you really give yourself the opportunity to really be in there? And I know for myself, being in an Elul, there's nothing like it, where my phone is off, and I'm able to focus on the Ramban and the Tzlach and the guys. And I'm here with you. I'm not recruiting now. I'm not going out. I'm here, being able to be with you. And that's something that's very, very important for you to think about in general. And it takes maturity. A lot of this year is maturity. Okay, it's not life is over. It's being able to start thinking maturely about yourself, about different ideas. And it's not losing your personality. It's about chewing on new ideas that you're going to read, whether it's from Rav Soloveitchik that we're going to talk tonight, or Rav Cook, or Rabbi Lord Sachs, or it's Rabbi Millstone, or it's all the different Dr. Hakaus, or all the different people you're going to be learning from. And chewing on those ideas, discussing it, arguing with it, being able to work on your emotions and being that mature person. That's going to be a lot of this year. The article which I gave you to read, it's an article by Rav Soloveitchik, 1978. If everyone could please stop doing the cups, it's very annoying. I appreciate it. It's called Redemption Prayer in Talmud Torah. And you might hear in Hebrew, they talk a lot about the gula. So that's the Hebrew word for redemption. What does the word redemption mean? What is the connection between redemption, prayer, and Talmud Torah? So the Rav asked this question, what is redemption? He answers very important. He says, redemption involves, if you have the article in front of you, you can follow along. Excuse me, I see around 3 or 4 people have it. So at least you can look around. Redemption involves a movement by an individual or community from the periphery of history to its center. I think it's very apropos. We're literally in the center of the Jewish world. Some people think that Yeshiva University is the center of the Jewish future. The truth is, Yeshiva HaKotel is in the center of the Jewish future. Right here is the center. It's being able to be part of the center. To be on the periphery means to be a non-history-making entity. While movement towards the center renders the same entity history-making and history-conscious. So obviously, it sounds very nice. What does it mean by history-making people or community? He defines this. A history-making people is one that leads a speaking, storytelling, communing free existence. In contrast, a non-history-making, non-history-involved group leads a non-community and therefore a silent, unfree existence. So it sounds, first of all, it's very strong. I don't know about you, what type of, when you think about that concept of a history-making people, a storytelling community of free existence, what holiday, maybe if I give a hint, what images do you think about?
Pesach.
Right, you think about Pesach, where the people with a story, V'igadat Levincha. It's not by chance I say that, because that's the reference that the Rav uses here. The concept of being, of Yitzhak, that's right. And he talks about that before getting to that, he says, like redemption, tefillah is the same type of experience. That the halacha, smichat gula l'tefillah, it's not just by chance, but they see that these categories, and I turn the page now for those people who are with me, that these that the halacha links tefillah with gula. The question is, what is this connection? And as we just said, he says that redemption comes, it's identical with the revelation of the word and the emergence of speech. And when a people leaves a mute world and enters a world of sound, speech, and song, it becomes a redeemed people, a free people, i.e., a mute life. If you have no voice, you have no sound, what he's going to say is you have no suffering, is identical with avdut, bondage. A speech-endowed life is a free life. Therefore, he starts off and says, there's a slave life. What's a slave life, as you know? Silence. Many of us have learned about this idea of avdut, which means what, he says? He has no message to deliver. The free man bears a message, has a good deal to tell. It's eager to convey his life story to anyone who cares to listen. Now, so you might say we're not slaves. So he defines the slave, and he says at the end of page 56, going into 57, the lack of basic experience, namely that of suffering or distress, which is perhaps the most central aspect of the human eye awareness. Suffering is not pain. Pain is when something happens to you, you feel that abnormal pain. Now we're not talking about that. It's not unique to humans. I turn the page to 57. But rather, what is suffering? Last paragraph reports page 57. Suffering or distress, in contradistinction to pain, is not a sensation but an experience. A spirituality known only to humans. And this is the distinction. Hear this. The spiritual reality is countered by man whenever he stands to lose his either sense of existential security, i.e. he's going to get sick, he's going to die, or his existential dignity, being embarrassed publicly. Whenever a merciless reality clashes with a human existential awareness, man suffers and finds himself in distress. So again, the animal, pain. So is the slave. The difference is that a slave has no silence. He doesn't have suffering. He doesn't have anything to cry about. You don't hear him crying. They're lacking the sounds. And this, if you turn the page, this is where he quotes the Zohar. As from the Yetziat Mitzrayim, until Moshe came, the people were quiet. So only when Moshe came, we found that we have to go through this Geula process. The Geula process is from being silent to finding a voice to being able to have the word. Three stages. You go from total silence. When Moshe came, we learned that you have to have a voice. He's going to call later on Tse'aka. To read it here on page 59. Suddenly they realized that all pain, anguish, humiliation, cruelty, all the greed and intolerance of man vis-a-vis his fellow man is evil. With suffering came loud protest, the cry, the unuttered question. In short, the dead silence of non-existence was gone. The voice of human existence was now heard. Okay? Turn the page. If you're up to page 60 with me. This is not only on a nationalistic level, that as a result of Moshe, we found our voice of Tzaka, and then we became a people with the Vigalta Levincha of having an Am. This is not only true of the political slave, but it's true of modern man. The Rav says that man is similar to a slave. How is a man's slave? He says as follows at the end of page 60, the unfree man differs existentially from a free man. One may existentially to be a slave in the midst, even you're politically and economic free. You are wealthy, but you could be considered a slave. Why is that? I turn to page 61. He explains that within slavery, there's only page 72, so it's going to be quick. Don't worry if you didn't read it. Slavery constitutes a tohu vavohu existence. He says, number one, is this concept of being anonymous. The anonymity of man is expressed in that you're going to be forgotten. It's part of the curse that the Ribbono Shalom gave to Adam HaRishon. Man, when we're lonely, that's one level of being anonymous, having a certain loneliness. But that's not the point of this article now. The second part of being this tohu vavohu existence, the slave existence, bottom of page 61, is that he calls man is ignorant. This is where I want to start talking about. So I just called you ignorant. He says, no. Let me qualify. Everyone here is very intelligent. When I say that man is ignorant, I turn to page 62. I do not refer, the Rav says, to his scientific achievements. In this area, modern man is clever and ingenious. What man fails to comprehend is not the world around him, listen to this, but the world within him. Particularly, and this is what I believe, if you haven't started doing in high school, which I think you did just on a psychological level, hopefully you're going to continue building that within also a religious level. What man failed to comprehend is not in the world around him, but the world within him, particularly his destiny and the needs of which he is supposed to have a clear awareness. Many would say that to accuse modern man of being unaware of his needs is absurd. The reverse they would maintain is true. Modern man is aware of many needs. Go ahead, read Felsen for me, middle of 62.
The risk to maintain. In fact, there are too many needs which claims attention. Entire technology is bent upon generating more and more needs in order to give man the opportunity to derive pleasure through the gratification of artificially fabricated needs.
Though this assertion is true, it does not contradict my previous statement, says the Rav, that contemporary man is unaware of his needs. Keep going.
Man is surely aware of many needs. But the needs that he is aware of are not always his own.
Anybody hear that? Man is surely aware of many needs, but the needs he's aware of are not always his own. Keep going.
At the very root of his failure to recognize one's truly worthwhile needs lies man's ability to misunderstand and misidentify himself. For example, to lose himself. Quite often, man loses himself by identifying himself with the wrong image. Because of this misidentification, man adopts the wrong table of needs which he feels he must ratify. Man responds quickly to the pressure of certain needs, not knowing whose needs that he is apt to gratify. At this juncture, sin is born. What is the cause of sin, if not the diabolical habit of man to be mistaken about his own self? Let me add, And a man fails to recognize himself because he is a man. As man, he was cursed by the Almighty, condemned to misuse his freedom and lose his own self. In other words, adoption of a wrong table of needs is a part of the human tragic destiny.
So now we're talking about understanding basic needs. If you turn the page to page 63, modern man is indeed existentially a slave because he's ignorant and fails to identify his own needs. Anybody, any thoughts about that so far?
So what he's trying to say is that you're being distracted by different needs that you don't, that you think that you have?
Yep. There's so many needs out there. The question is, do you know what your real needs are? Meaning he had started talking about redemption at the beginning. What's redemption? He said is when you're from the periphery, and then you're going what? You're making, you have your story, and you're making history, and you're in the center. Meaning, what he's going to keep going is what? That you know your real needs, and you go with your real destiny. His claim right now is that what? Man doesn't know the needs within himself. He's so busy trying to do all these fantasy football things and trying to do all of the other things out there that he doesn't, and he busies himself with all that gratification. Please stop with the cups. Then what happens? He doesn't really know what his real needs are. That's point number one. And therefore, he's still considered a slave so far.
Meaning that he classifies himself as something and then he thinks that he has those needs?
He takes what he calls a table of needs. Now, you know, you have like a table of contents?
Yeah.
The Rav used the word table of needs. I have these table of needs when the truth is those aren't my table of needs. I think these are my table of needs because I am trying to gratify other things. But the question is that what I really need? He says that, yeah, God.
Who is he saying he's a slave to? That man is a slave to himself.
Slave, the question. Could be to himself, or he's saying that what? That there's a certain, he had defined slave in what way? How do you define slave? That he didn't have, you know, he was mute. He didn't have a voice, he didn't have a story. That's the slave. It's not lav davka, a slave to somebody else right now. It's the general concept of a slave, of not having a voice, not having a story, not knowing yourself. And he goes on, continuing on page 63, with this idea, we find this in halacha. Concept of tshuva, like Mr. Book said, is thought is based on our belief that man is free to establish himself or determine his own identity, positive or negative manner. While in sin, man misidentifies and alienates himself from himself. In the case of tshuva, he reverses the process of misidentification. He discovers himself and returns to his true self. We're not going to get into it now, but he says that's what Hataras Nadarim is about, and that's what the concept of Asmachta is about, when you gamble and you think you're going to win, right? Because you're just, you think you're too much of yourself at that point. What he calls in page 64, he calls it the pseudo-I, with the wrong table of needs. So the question is, how can I, or one, redeem oneself from this kind of slavery? So from Mitzrayim, that was done completely by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, the case of existential slavery, what he calls us slaves right now, is different. It's up to man, very parallel to what Book's message was, who's in charge with the task of redeeming himself from a shadow existence. God wills man to be a creator. Such an empowering message. We have a concept called imitatio dei, which means v'halachta bidrachav, which means that we have to imitate God. Just like God is compassionate, we have to be compassionate. Just like God clothes the naked, we have to be naked. Just like God does chesed, we have to do chesed. Just like God, says Rav Soloveitchik, is bereshit bara Elohim, so too, we have to be a creator also. His first job is to create. What's our first job to create? We have to create ourselves. To create himself as a complete being. Man, the mute being, must search for speech and find it all by himself. Man comes into our world as a helic amorphous being. He's created an image of God, but this image is a challenge to be met, not a gratuitous gift. Etc., etc. Man was commanded to redeem himself in order to attain full being. How do I do this? Answers of Soloveitchik, the first part is through tefillah. Turn the page. This can be achieved only through tefillah. I'm on page 65 now. Who prays? Only the sufferer prays. Remember, sufferer is not identical to pain. If man does not find himself in narrow straits, if he's not troubled by anything, if he knows not what sarah is, then he need not to pray. To a happy man, the content man, the secret of prayer was not revealed. God needs neither thanks nor hymns. He wants to hear the outcry of man confronted with a ruthless reality. He expects tefillah to rise from a suffering world cognizant of its genuine needs. In short, through tefillah, man finds himself. Where are you going to find those table of needs? Through tefillah. Tefillah enlightens man about his needs. It tells man the story of his hidden hopes and expectations. It teaches him how to behold a vision and how to strive in order to realize this vision. Of course, the very instant he finds himself, he becomes a redeemed being. Question on that?
Yeah. You said how if he doesn't have tzaros, then he's learning the davening. So does that really back to some chatters about the Makos Rambam?
There is that piece. To understand that you are the... It could be. First of all, it does. This is very much within his machshava there of the Rambam.
So according to the Rambam, it's only major tzaros that you have to...
That would be the Rambam, correct. But then... Even the Ramban himself says that it's a chesed. That it's a chesed that God gave us that, you know, you should take advantage of. But the concept of being able... What does it mean, the sufferer again? The sufferer means something that's uniquely human experience. Love, dafka, pain. But what he had talked about, this existential, which is connected to what I did talk about on Shabbos, the existential frailty and loneliness or security. But then what does he say? How again... They use the same model from Yetziat Mitzrayim. What's the structure of how do we liberate ourselves through tefillah? He says the same idea. Silence. Many times, if you have no prayer at all, the silence of atrophy, the absence of need awareness. Many people don't connect to tefillah because they don't know what their real needs are. That's A. B comes the tze'aka. If you realize this existential distress, distress doesn't mean that I don't have a good family. Doesn't mean that I don't have good sisters and brothers and parents and a good parnasa. But they're still realizing that you're a mortal man. And understanding that even though today things are going great, who knows what's going to be tomorrow. This, and that's not me being morose, it's just the nature of existence. So you go from silence to an outcry. An outcry is tse'aka. Where you find, again, you leave that muted existence of slavery. And you have a tefillah of tse'aka. You're going to see in tshuva, the Rambam says that the nature of what? Of that Seres Yimei HaTshuva is to be Tzo'ek. Which means to get out of this existence of a muted existence. Especially nowadays where people are just so busy. Therefore they have no voice. They're not realizing who they are. Comes that Seres Yimei HaTshuva to be able to see be Tzo'ek. It's not just tefillah. Shomea kol tze'aka. There is a distress and loud human weeping. Tzaka is primordial prayer, the voice restored, the world's still lacking. What's the final stage? Tefillah. It's transformed into speech. We're almost finished. Man at this level not only feels his needs, on page 67 now, but understands them as well. And from there you go from tzaka to tefillah. Tefillah is more than just stam a shriek and screaming out and understand that you're in stress, but it's well thought out. It's connected with intellect. You go from an emotional need awareness, but you also understand who you are to be able to be redeemed. Tzaka, that he says, let me say what he says here, they coexist. I'm at the bottom of page 67. Tefillah, though it represents a more advanced awareness, does not replace tzaka. Man, even though most sophisticated and educated, frequently resembles the baby who cries because of pain. A lot of people say, when I'm Nebuch and I cry. And after all, daven. But when I'm going to be a big CEO or CFO or COO or a big lawyer, big doctor, who needs to be a doc? Who needs to daven? Soloveitchik says, based over here, you have to understand that he says you have to know there's a difference between being childish and childlike. There are definitely times in this world to be childish and have a good time and kid around. He says that during tefillah, it's always to be childlike. Which means it doesn't matter the stage that you get to. You always have to remember that you're dependent on Hashem. That's the tzaka, the crying out for pain. And therefore, this tzaka is what we're going to be starting soon. This is called the slichot. Tzaka is slichot, which has the yigibo midot, the vidoy, the repetition of short tefillot of Mishan al Avram Avinu Hu Yanenu, the reading of Psukim, I turn the page to 68 and it ends at 72, so don't worry about it. Prayer is saka, lacks the gradual development of theme, the structure. Tefillah is a meditative, reflective act. Saka is immediate and compulsive. This is one level. Classic Rav Soloveitchik is, you can't, give me a second just to finish it up, you can't just stop by tefillah. To have this redemption, what do you need? You need Talmud Torah. When prayer rises from tzaka to tefillah, an experience in which the whole human personality is involved, it emerges with another redemptive experience, namely that of Talmud Torah. That's why Kriyas HaTorah is within the framework of tefillah. What does Talmud Torah do for the redemption of man? He quotes the Gemara that many of us have learned in Masechet Nida that says what? That the angel taught Kol HaTorah Kula, what? While we were in the womb. And what happened? Once we were coming out, what happened? What did the Malach do? Smacked us, right? And we forgot all the Torah. What is the obvious question that everybody asks? Why do it in the first place? I'm on page 69. Why do it in the first place? What's the answer? Based on what he's saying. If the angel makes the baby forget everything he taught it, page 69, why did he bother to teach the embryo at all? The answer is again obvious. Rav Simblai wanted to tell us that when a Jew studies Torah, he's confronted with something which is not foreign and extraneous, but rather intimate, already familiar, because he's already studied it and the knowledge was stored up in the recesses of his memory and became part of him. He studies, in effect, his own stuff. Learning is the recollection of something familiar. The Jew studying Torah is like the amnesia victim who tries to reconstruct from fragments the beautiful world he once experienced. In other words, by learning Torah, man returns to his own self. Man finds himself and advances toward a charted, illuminated, and speaking I existence. Once he finds himself, he finds redemption. This is the same idea again from Torah. We were silent, then your voice is restored, but speech is lacking, sounds, not words, are audible. Then what happens through cognitive curiosity, amazement awakened? How many people told me this week that, oh my God, I got a oomph. I was really bothered by that question. I don't remember being bothered by that question. I didn't understand. What did the Tzlach want to say? I can't tell you. I've done the Tzlach many times. Rav Heller said to me this morning, did you do the Tzlach yet? I said, I'm not sure I'm going to do it. He says, it's my favorite Tzlach. So then I spent an hour tonight looking at the Tzlach to say, okay, is it worth it to do it? And then I got a good geschmack out of it. So tomorrow morning we're going to do the Tzlach. Because the Tzlach is gevalt. We're going to do the Tzlach. And then we're going to move on to the sugya. But having this curiosity of saying, oh, it's geschmack. You're awakened, Uri Yishani, you're woken up. That we begin to be annoyed because we didn't understand. We are perturbed, I'm on page 70, by something which is part of ourselves, but which we are unable to define. And then what happens? The word breaks through. And books gets up and delivers an articulate Dvar Torah. He doesn't read an art scroll and say, oh, good job. Right? He says, okay, yeah, I know nobody wants to listen, Gajavas. Right? No. You start taking yourself a little bit more seriously. You understand what the Torah is, that it's part of you, it's part of the redemption. The word breaks through, there's a clear and distinct cognition. He's aware of his needs because, listen to this coexistence. He's aware of his needs because he davens. But he's aware of his intellectual, creative capacities because he learns. He's sure that his needs are his own, and that the intellectual capacity is a part of himself. This twofold knowledge is cathartic and redemptive. There's this, you can't have one without the other. You can't just be a good learner and not a good davener. You can't just be a good davener and not a good learner. You need to be able to create and recreate yourself within your needs to be complete. And this is what I did say on Shabbos also, that the Sifrei says, Avodah Shebalev is both Tefillah and Talmud Torah. He ends off the article saying that there's a dialectic, which means that there's an inner contradiction. On one level, tefillah is what? Self-acquisition, self-discovery, self-objectification, self-redemption. At this level, when you have tefillah, it makes man feel whole. And that's why it's hard, because many of us haven't thought about tefillah. And many of us have been taught, okay, I should individualize my tefillah, it's all about my needs. I want to pass the test, makes it a nice shopping list. But the deeper level is start understanding the tefillah that you're saying, Yerushalayim, and Tzmichat Geula, and Re'ina V'Anyenu, and understanding Refuah. Those are going to be the real needs. Self-acquisition. Prayer makes man feel whole at this level. Prayer means self-acquisition. However, There's another aspect of prayer, and prayer and tefillah is an act of giving away. Prayer means sacrifice. Avodah Shebelev is sacrifice also. Understanding that the world is theocentric. Understanding what I am and dedicating myself to Hashem. The returning to Hashem of body and soul, everything one possesses, and really being real. We end off the article 71 and 72. This is the concept of Akedat Yitzchak. Obviously, we don't believe in paganism and the concept of sacrificing our children. But it's just the idea that man belongs to God without qualification, and that God from time to time will make a demand. Even God claimed Moses what Hashem wanted. He demanded the return of body and soul without permitting him to cross the Jordan River. That's what Moshe wanted. But Moshe complied and he understood. This is the concept of the last part. A new equation emerges. Prayer equals sacrifice. Initially, prayer helps man discover himself through understanding and affirmation of his need awareness. But then, and I turn the page and this is the end of it, man who was told to create himself, objectify himself, and gain independence and freedom for himself must return everything he considers his own to Hashem. Now, obviously, if you would have read this article, I wouldn't have had to just go over the whole thing with you. I still thought it's worthwhile to go over with you because I think it was very powerful. I think so. I hope some people thought also. Highly recommend that you go over it, because next time it should not be just me saying certain ideas. But hopefully the whole point of it is to have a discussion also. But definitely something to think about this redemption of finding your own real needs of self-acquisition through this Talmud Torah tefillah experience, getting, again, not being mute, but getting that sound and crying out for the relationship within yourself through tefillah, that intellectual curiosity, also understanding how to articulate what Torah means to me. One of the major questions that I hope everybody thinks about. And as I said, I encourage you to read a lot this year. Even if you weren't a reader in high school, I encourage you to read a lot, to be able to deepen your hashkafa. In English, Weltanschauung, which also means your world outview, your world view. How do you understand what, it's not English, how do you are able to understand what the Ribono Shel Olam is in your life, to challenge yourself. So Be'ezrat Hashem, hopefully for this, I encourage everyone to read the article now. And then next time, maybe to have a good discussion with me. I'm assuming that we're going to be going now to do something downstairs, maybe. I'm not sure. It's 10:30. I don't know what the rest of the schedule of the day is. We're going to sing one song. We'll call it a night. Okay, there's still a little bit more about what we should clean up. What happened? We're going to sing one more song.